happens, there are spikes in family violence. Right. And even in Australia, looking at our history, there are spikes in family violence of between 30 to 100% during these times and in the aftermath.
Hey, welcome to the Influencing Society podcast, a podcast that is going to develop your leadership, it's going to sharpen your faith, and help you influence your world for good and for God. My name is Chris Ansby, and I am the host of this podcast. And today, I have the privilege of sitting here with Chris Burrell and John Rudder. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, you guys are from the Fathering Project. I've only come across this project fairly recently. Tell me a bit about the project. What is the Fathering Project?
Yeah, so essentially the Fathering Project started in 2013 over in Western Australia by a gentleman called Professor Bruce Robinson, who's still a leading lung specialist over there. So he's been pretty busy over the last two or so months. But so Bruce, he deals with men on their deathbed. So guys that are suffering from asbestosis, cancer-related diseases, and actually sit on their deathbed face-to-face like this and say, hey, mate, you've got 3 weeks to live.
Yeah, well.
And out of those conversations, he kept hearing three main things that the men said back to him. And they were, you know what, Bruce, I wish you didn't work so hard. I wish I spent more time with my family. And I wish someone had told me before it was too late. So out of those conversations, Bruce is like, wow, there's actually a really strong correlation here with men that they're wanting to be good fathers. And he started researching with the WA University and a few other institutes in Western Australia. And he found out that through the research that kids that did have an effective father or father figure generally were much better off than kids who didn't have an effective father or father figure. And just through that research, he formed the company called The Fathering Project. And for the first, I'd say, 5 or so years, it was a research-based organisation. And it still is, but out of that research, we've actually developed a pliable program that now we roll out in schools. And when I say schools, I mean childcare centres, primary schools, high schools, and now we're going into the corporate world and also into the sporting world as well.
So apart from the doctor in Western Australia that set this up, who saw some evidence on people's deathbeds around why fathering is important. Is there other stats that back up why the Fathering Project as well?
So definitely. Well, I mean, anyone who's even – I come from a youth work background, so anecdotally you can see the experience practically when you go to work every day and you're seeing mental health issues, and there seems to be a trend, so you can see that. And what's great about the Fathering Project is we've taken it deeper than anecdotally and actually got – research backing it. So when I was studying youth work, it was always talked about that, you know, who are you going to be, you know, helping and what are the protective factors, as we'd call it, for a young person. And one of them was having a father or at least a father figure or a role model in that space. But what's great, again, with Bruce is that he's taken that anecdotal sort of discussions from those fathers and then backed it with research, which has been powerful. So, yeah, definitely got some research. So 71% of all high school dropouts come from fatherless homes, which is 9 times the average. 75% of adolescent patients in chemical abuse centres also come from fatherless homes, which is 10 times the average. You also know high stats around incarceration. That a lot of men that are in jails come from a fatherless home. And I think it's important that we also define that fatherless doesn't mean it has to be a, you know, broken home where a dad is removed and it's just divorce. In the Fathering Project, we want to just touch on all dads and say that you actually have a really important role that that we want you to have the confidence and competence to step into.
Right. So not just dads that have left the family, but also dads that are at home but maybe absent from fathering their kids as well. So if from what I'm hearing, there's a positive correlation to lack of a father figure to higher drug use, higher incarceration in prison, mental higher health, leaving of schools. So pretty much a whole societal effect comes from this one aspect of not having a father figure.
Well, we always say, look, fathering's not the magic bullet, but research does show that it is a heavily contributing factor, both in a positive way and in a negative way if it's not there in a child's life. And I guess that's why our mandate as a company is to really inspire and equip not just fathers, but father figures, and when I say father figures, that's your granddads, your uncles, your best mates, dad, your older brother, if there's a big enough age gap. We want to inspire and equip those men to be involved with the children in their lives in a positive way for the benefit of those kids. And the vision of Bruce Robinson was for every child in Australia to have an effective father or father figure. So that's what really drives our company, drives our decisions, drives our programs, et cetera.
And the passion that we'll bring to it. And I think it's important that we also say that it's not about mum's not doing enough.
Yeah,
it's actually No. They're actually probably doing more than they need to. Mm. And
have you got dreams to start a mothering project as well, John?
Well, not myself personally, but I don't know if I'm qualified for that one. But we want to see that the organisation is actually empowering to mums, is actually saying you're doing a great role, you know, great job in fulfilling the role of raising your kids and being the glue in the family. But just making sure that we've got a dad stepping into it, you know, that we're not sort of taking the easy road in some capacity and going, I think mum's got this. It's actually dad saying there's something different when a dad speaks into a young person's life, and that's the research, and that's powerful, that we do have a different role and it's worthwhile getting into knowing how do you cut through and how do you speak into a young person's life and make an impact.
Do you think this has been a problem in Australia since we're only a couple hundred years old? We came from, you know, our ancestors in England, wherever, so a generation cut off there. Yep. Halfway through then, we, like in early 1900s, we also had a war that cut out a generation.
Mm. Yep.
Have we always been a fatherless nation, so to speak?
I believe so, yeah. I actually do. If you look at society, and I mean, we look at the industrial age, it's been a big impact on families.
Mm.
And that's been, you know, going for hundreds of years. But we're looking at exactly, we were born into that, and then we've got wars, as you've said, and PTSD that's come from World War II. So, again, we might have had dads that have come home, but they weren't as present as they possibly could be.
Mm. Sure.
And so the role wasn't being met in the best way. And I say that with respect. I don't say that, you know, that dads to feel guilty. Parenting has enough guilt in it. Mm. But it's just sort of saying, can I do more? Can I just be better than I was
yesterday? And I realise we're approaching this with a universal perspective here.
Totally.
Not saying all dads are like this or all dads aren't. We're just kind of covering with a blanket kind of here as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
Mm. So what does utopia look like? What if dads were doing the job, what does society look like in that? Like we've experienced this and we see these statistics. How would it affect Australia? What would we look like as a nation if dads were doing what the Fathering Project kind of projected?
Mm. Well, I guess before going to that, I know John's got a good answer for that one. But it's not a new thing just in Australia. Like, I mean, around the globe, a lot of countries are facing the similar problems of fatherlessness. And I actually found a really interesting article by fatherhood.org, and it's called The $100 Billion Man.
Mm.
And it essentially outlines the federal government in America spends about $99.8 billion, so let's round it up to $100 billion.
Sure.
On programs each year, such as child support enforcement and anti-poverty efforts to support father-absent families.
Wow. So there's research on this worldwide. And and you guys yourselves are not a government agency, but you are government-funded as well.
Yeah, correct.
You're not politically aligned or religiously aligned either, but and which I love the fact that the government sees this as an issue amongst everything that's going on.
Mm.
They're willing to contribute funds, which obviously, you know, everyone's vying for at the moment, absolutely, to something like this. So this is obviously something important, not just from a Christian standpoint, but from a government standpoint. I think this can really affect our economy and our future moving forward.
Oh, definitely. I love that. I love that the government has seen there's real power in and direct connections to prevention in this. And, you know, so again, in my youth work capacity and working in school chaplaincy, that most of our mental health services were around, you know, the bottom of the cliff stuff. Once we have a diagnosis, now we can take someone from a diagnosis and back to recovery because we can measure that from a government that feels fantastic. We've done something.
Mm.
It's tangible. It takes guts, I think, to go, oh, wow, let's go down the chain a little bit and say, actually, let's start empowering dads.
Sure.
And then see what the impact is. So we're not going to see an immediate, convert, I suppose, of stats or something, but it's worthwhile. I think that's powerful from the government's perspective to say, let's invest in some money in this. And that has come from the research. That's what's been powerful. That's why I love the Fathering Project, why I joined it, because I thought this is actually really tangible stuff and we've got a good backing. There's been enough even market research in WA where they started to see how it's working in schools and test and measure, and then to be able to go nationally last year.
Just awesome. Off the back of that as well. So what we actually do, we go into organisations, we go into schools, we go into places where men gather and we start what's called a dad's group.
Sure.
And a dad's group does three simple things. It connects dads with kids in a fun way.
Mm.
Just shows them that fathering can be fun again. So we do things like paper planes and pizza, went to a bangers and bingo night, they do fishing afternoons on the pier.
Yeah, great.
When the NRL was on, some schools would do, you know, Cowboys, Broncos, round one in the gym at the school. Number two, it connects dads with dads. So as John said, mums are doing it pretty well. It's the dads aren't doing it so well.
Why is that? I know my wife loves a good talk. She can pick up the phone and she talks to people. She's well connected. Do guys not naturally connect in the same way?
Well, there's lots of things to it, isn't it? I think parenting is a vulnerable space.
Yeah.
I know, actually, I remember hearing Steve Bidoff, who's written Raising Boys and Child Psychology, is a brilliant man. And he was talking about that moment when you're a father and you're holding a child for the first time. You look down and go, wow, this is the most amazing experience. And it was for me. I remember my boy, who's now 14. And it changed me. I was a dad, finally, you know. I was like, wow, look at this. But about 30 seconds after that, you think, oh, no, I'm going to mess you up. Like, I don't know. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I think it's a vulnerable space. And as men, we want to get it right, right? So it takes a lot of courage to step into a space and go, I know nothing about this, you know. And I don't think we do that well as men. And then, therefore, when we connect, I think that women can do that, where they ring up and go, give me some advice, or what are we doing? This is where I'm at. And we can naturally talk about things. If men get together, it's rare that we'd get together and go, I really struggle as a dad. Sure. You know, that's not a conversation, and that's a powerful conversation to have. Because even if nothing else, you see another guy that goes, I feel the same. You know, so you're not alone in it. And we see that in dads' groups. 100%. When dads come along thinking, oh, man, I've just admitted, by even coming to this dads' group, I've just admitted that I can't do it. But when they walk in and go, oh, all of us feel the same, oh, there's a relief. And suddenly there's this, you know, open to the vulnerability, I suppose, of learning and developing.
I think it's a very Australian male mentality as well. Yeah. So I've been in some countries where it's quite normal to share and be open.
Yep.
But in Australia, men kind of have that pack mentality. If one person does it, the damn wall can break and everyone can go through with it.
Absolutely.
But to get that one to do it, it almost takes that leader, because otherwise vulnerability is seen as a sign of weakness.
Yeah,
often.
It is.
As you said before as well, you said, you know, the walls have made us a fatherless nation, essentially. And this is a broad brushstroke comment, but a lot of men, they role model what they've experienced as men. So if they didn't have a present father, that's kind of how they outplay their fathering with their kids. So a lot of our parents' generation didn't have a present father because they either died in the battlefield or they died in here and in here when they came home. So what we see is within these dads' groups, you've got a lot of really good dads that have had engaged fathers. Then on the other hand, you've got a lot of dads that aren't really too sure what to do.
Yeah.
So you see this really beautiful general mentoring process where a dad is not really sure what to do. He sees a good dad approach a kid in this situation. It's like, oh, that's how you do it. Yeah. So I try that with my kids.
So we're fighting a generational battle here.
Definitely.
And so I guess it might be two or three generations, but I often think in the Bible, when the Bible talks about generational curses of the Old Testament, it's more like less things like, hey, a witch doctor's cast something on your family, and more like something like this, the removal of fathers or an input into life.
Yep.
So this is probably, you know, I definitely see this as part of God's work as breaking generational dysfunction cycles as well.
Yep.
So you're talking about three things that you do when you go into the schools, one and two.
Yep. So one was connecting dads with kids, two is dads with dads. So within a group, whether you're a CEO or whether you're a janitor or unemployed, within that group, you've got two things in common. You're a father or you're a father figure, and you've got a kid there. So everyone's fatherhood's the ultimate equalizer in those groups. And men see that. And in that space, they can share their wins and their losses, which is powerful. And thirdly, connects dads back with the organization or with the school. So at the moment, because of our funding, our main focus is schools. Research shows that if a father, the father can impact the kid's life the most effectively by connecting with them when they start school.
Right.
So that space is...
So that's a formative season?
Yep, it's a very powerful season. So if we get the dad engaged early enough, the stats show that he'll be engaged for the whole 12 years and so on, even to a greater extent in some cases than the mother would be, which is really powerful. So by connecting dads back with the school in Australia, that particular space is notoriously a mother-dominated space, which is fantastic. But the power of when a kid sees a dad turn up to a sports day or turn up to a barbecue or something like that, it just changes the kid and... it can impact the kid for years to come after that,
And I want to circle back around to the programming that you do about it being more preventative than reactive, and it sounds like less bottom the cliff and more let's stop them jumping.
Yep.
I'll circle back around to that in a moment, but I do want to talk about the COVID environment and some trends that we've seen from that, because it has drastically affected the family unit, and Australia is not as... far advanced as some countries, but can you tell me a bit about some positives and negatives that you've seen in the trend of COVID that we need to look out for, that we can speak into, even from overseas, whatever you've seen?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I guess everyone's aware there are negatives. Like, we're no experts in the space of family violence or DV. This information's out there in the public to look up and look at it as well. But when we do come across cases of when these situations pop up, we do refer them to the correct agencies. But it's fairly obvious that this is an unprecedented time, like a pandemic like this has never swept across the world. But there is research around different kinds of natural disasters such as earthquakes, hurricanes, fires and floods. And looking back at those situations, there are spikes in family violence.
Right.
And even in Australia, looking at our history, there are spikes in family violence of between 30 to 100% during these times and in the aftermath. So we can definitely see that through this time that we'll expect the same, and we are seeing the same, which is quite unfortunate.
But is that from isolation, like the families being mashed together again, maybe when they weren't ready for that quality time, or is that from that? Is it from the stresses of finances?
Yeah, you've nailed it. There's a lot of mitigating factors. So, yeah, stresses of finance, insecurity in jobs and homes. You've got people that are condensed under one roof for an extended period of time. Another big thing as well is people who are domestic violence victims, they can't readily free themselves from that situation because they are restricted.
Yep.
And also their support services as well may be streamlined or maybe on hold at this time as well, so they can't really reach out to anybody in a situation that might be.
Sure. And because like China is further ahead than us, there's been stuff there that Australia can learn from. Have we seen trends go through there as their recovery is further along than us?
Yeah, definitely. Again, we're seeing, well, there's agencies talking about that once they can actually come out of the homes, that there's like a backlog of people wanting to get divorces. You know, so we're seeing that
fairly. Well, straight out of isolation.
Yeah, straight out of isolation. Sure. Saying, and to the point where they're actually now vetting who can qualify to actually get a divorce in China. And that's tough to even look at. But I guess, is that COVID-19 or is that there and COVID-19's unveiled that?
Sure.
You know, and I think we need to look at that. We can't just blame it and go, oh, well, the pressure and the stresses. I think it's an opportunity for us to look at in family and go, have we got it all happening together? Are we on the same page here? Have we got the same mission and vision for what we're going on? And I think, you know, that takes – yeah, a lot to do. We've got to almost sweep the table off and start again. And it's hard to do whilst there's so many stresses and insecurities and instability around work and income and health.
Totally. You know? And the family home has become where you raise your children, where you put them to bed, where you feed them, where you school them, where mum works, where dad works.
That's it.
Like, and where you exercise, it can be the whole life. That's the whole – all around this little sphere where before they had all this other area to go out. So
–
do you have any advice, people listening, going through that right now, and from what you've seen and some tips that you've given, and maybe this is just to the dads of the household, whatever, have you got any tips for them if they're going through it right now and dealing with the same situation that we've seen? We don't want our families being lined up outside the courthouse trying to get divorces after this.
Yeah.
I think that's worse for our nation. So what tips could you give them in this moment?
Well, it's hard because I've got some tips, but I also want to just say the environment is hard because it's almost like every organization has flooded the market with noise straight away going, oh, do this and, you know, this will be the silver bullet for that sort of thing. So I just really think that we've just got to keep it super simple.
Mm.
And you've said a couple of times, the family unit, that's your vehicle for getting through this, actually. Mm. So getting back to some real simple principles. I often would say to families, start with the end in mind. You might be in the crisis right now, but where are you heading and what do you want to look at when you're looking back?
Right, a bigger vision, totally. A goal.
So let's say if it's 6 months or 12 months or whatever, but even then this shouldn't matter, and I say that flippantly, but with families I've worked with in youth work, I would often say, when your kids are 20, what does it look like? What's your family look like?
Sure.
You know, and so these bumps are going to be there. So how do you have principles that are going to guide you through that sort of stuff instead of being reactionary to everything?
Right.
Life is tough, right? It's there's no fairy tales that I've seen, okay? Mm. But how we react to things makes a massive difference. And so having that long-term vision, and so I would encourage dads to be that person, because if you look at what everyone else in the family is looking for, they're looking for you for security and guidance and support. And we often, if we see this in organizations, if you have a great leader, people come underneath it.
Mm. Right.
And we feel security, we feel so many of our emotional needs met by someone who says, we've got this, hey, this is cool. So even if dads are struggling in themselves, get support and come under someone else's leadership and mentoring so that you can then feed that down into your family and just build security and safety around that sort of stuff as a principle. So the detail stuff maybe will come, but we're very big advocates of the family meeting as a practical tip.
Sure, around the dinner table, totally, wherever.
Yeah, absolutely, even if it's daily. I mean, some things that we talked about is even having limiting news, for example.
Right.
Is it good for our kids to be watching constant news feeds? We know that COVID-19 is out there. We know that there's stats happening. Those stats are going to come through on the Facebook feed, or you're going to get them. Sure. It's not like you're going to miss out. But just have a look at protecting that family unit and saying, you know, are you having a meeting each day? okay, this is what I need to do for work, guys. Can from this time I need to be on a video call, which is something I have to do at home.
So communication, overly communicate. Totally.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely, and define. So what do you want to achieve out of the day, that not discounting the kids are they're part of this, and saying, yep, when are we going to have some time with you? To a wife, when are we going to have some date time? How are we going to do that? You know, yeah, looking at all those fundamental things and sort of maybe segment your day and your week and just say, am I touching on all things health we talk about often, even in our own team? When are we down tools and go and do something to get our own mental health right?
Yeah.
So just trying to keep it really, really simple, I suppose, and good long-term principles that you would do at any time, but we're just more intentional about it now, I suppose, in this time.
And I guess giving ourselves a blatant shout out, COVID-19 environments fast-forwarded a lot of our planning that we had around our own suite of virtual tools that we were going to release this year anyway. So it's fast-forwarded that for us to the point that we're actually releasing what's called the Fathering Channel today.
Great.
Which is available nationwide. Cool. The Dads on Mass, featured on Channel 7 last night, actually. It's basically a dad or fathering TV channel. We've got cooking shows. We've got one of the Married at First Sight judges has come on board for a podcast this Friday. Webinars, Zoom meetings. So we've got a lot of content there that dads can freely tap into. And
so when this podcast goes live, this will be live as well. How do they access that? What's the TV channel? How do they get on board with it?
Yeah, simply going to our website.
Yes,
website.
We can include the link in the bio.
Yeah, thefatheringproject.org. Yep.
Fatheringproject.org.
And from our homepage, you'll be able to see the Fathering Channel. But it's about engaging, having a look at what there's something on every day and having a look at what's going to be best for you. But again, just that intentional space of going and saying, I need to be inspired. I want to find some more tips. I want to get through this.
Yeah.
And just taking that proactive step, I suppose.
I think it's a great option for everyone filling their head with so much random content, Netflix and everyone putting out more and more.
Yep.
It's great we have the right people putting out the right content as well.
Mm.
So let's circle back to that programming that I was talking to you about. It reminded me of a story I heard once, and sometimes I feel like how a lot of organizations operate, that the rescue organizations or the helping organizations, they see people floating in a river drowning and they jump in the river to pull them out. Mm. And that's how they operate their business. Whereas you guys seem to be going up the river, finding out what's throwing people in and trying to deal with it at that level.
Yeah.
So do you operate at both levels? Do you operate on helping people out of those issues, or is that more where you refer people and you're more the preventative care?
Mm. Spot on. Well, our founder, he says this, we're about turning off the tap instead of mopping up the water.
Sure.
So you've nailed it there. So I think our main driving force is educating fathers. It's never a dad bash, but we're out there to educate fathers on how to be a better dad tomorrow than what they are today. And if we do come across cases where there are issues that do pop up, obviously the men talk about it themselves. So these dads groups are designed to be for the dads. They're actually run by the dads themselves in partnership with the organisation, and we attach a mentor to those dads groups. So we do train the dads group leaders to, I guess, pass on any issues to the fantastic community services we've got in the community already to deal with those things that pop up.
And so predominantly it's through schools as well. So is dad groups kind of like your lifeblood of the organization? That's where most of the education happens, or was happening before COVID, I assume?
Well, it is, and we still want to do that. So it's the vehicle, definitely the vehicle to connect to dads. I mean, if you look at any business, you'd say, who's got our people?
Yeah.
And schools are definitely, they've already got our people.
Sure.
But schools also see a massive benefit, because one thing they often talk about is they don't know how to connect with dads either.
Mm.
And they know that when dads are connected, that the children start engaging in school. So they're almost saying, we need a vehicle to do this. And we go, well, we've got education, we've got a structure to do it, and we're mobilised to support you. Plus, we also then look at inviting mentors and other volunteer support people from the local community to be a part of that. So we're just building this hub for men to get together and for hopefully good stuff to happen, and where we can deliver our content. Yeah,
and I guess the awareness of what you do as well is, so it just shines a spotlight on a major issue as well. So even for my life, I may not be going along to a dad group because my kid's not in school, but it makes me automatically be like, all right, these are the things I need to do in my life now to have my daughter grow up in this way.
Yeah.
Which I think is phenomenal as well. So how many schools are you in Australia-wide as a Fathering Project?
Yeah, so initially we started with 150 schools in WA and about 90 in Sydney. And then we got that federal government funding last year, which allowed us to expand nationwide. So we've got about 35 in Victoria now, 34 in Queensland, and we're going into South Australia, Northern Territory later this year as well.
Great.
Yeah, so as John said, schools is just one of our channels. So we're looking to replicate what we're doing in schools, sports teams,
yeah,
corporate, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So if you're a dad out there and you're in a school that doesn't have a dad's group, definitely reach out to us. We'd love to contact your principal and have a chat and see what we can do there. Mm. And likewise, John's organising our mentor framework, if you want to speak into that,
yeah,
what that's about.
So definitely, it's, as an organisation, we realise that we're going to build bigger than we have capacity for as far as our, we're a non-profit organisation. So we've got to be careful with our employees and staff and things like that. So it's the sort of natural restrictions with that. So, but we also see that there is power when we have local dads. So what could be a high school dad or maybe a grandfather that can speak into the lives of and support the lives of new dads, like, you know, let's say you guys as a perfect demographic. Mm. So we're inviting mentors and training mentors and engaging mentors that we can place in the local community or in their local community. So it could be a school, could be a sporting club, as Chris said, or even childcare centres. We're looking at that as a really great space because, again, we want to get dads as early as we can up the river, like you just said.
Yeah.
And childcare centres are that because also whilst you're there, you're actually a bit more thirsty and hungry, and I want to get this right. So it's a great time to say, hey, here's some really great principles and some great things that we want you to start to shape your fathering journey as.
Yeah.
So we want to get to dads as early as possible, but, you know, dads of any age, we can always get better.
Yeah.
You know, and it's simple. The thing we talk about is the BUS principle, and I think that's powerful. We can speak into that, which is this BUS. So this is the great principles that we'd say as a father at any age is about being there. And how are you being there and really being present with your child?
Yeah.
You know, having those conversations where there's genuine eye contact and you're taking real genuine interest in that child of yours, you know. So how are you being there? How do you display unconditional love?
Right.
And again, like we're talking in the beginning, that's actually really difficult if we haven't seen unconditional love as men. So we're almost relying on what was your father like that. And so that can be a tough space for some men in our dads groups to sort of go, I haven't seen that. I don't even know what unconditional love looks like. But we say just be careful that love doesn't become a transaction, that your child doesn't feel through bad behaviour that love is withdrawn. Okay, so it's a tough one, but it's important.
Yeah,
because, again, we've got it comes out safety and security for a young person. And the S is special. How do you let your child know that they're okay just as they are, that they're special and you love them just as they are? You don't need them to be anything else, but you're speaking. It's almost like affirming, again, that self-esteem that I notice these things in you. You're creative, you're funny, you might be stubborn. That might mean that you've actually got great perseverance, you know, but you're still speaking into them and saying, wow, I see the individual qualities of who you are. So the BUS principle is what we really try and keep very simple in a lot of our content and give dads those principles as early as possible.
I think that's gold. Something that everyone can take away. I think I remember that.
Boys, get on the bus.
Get on the bus.
On the bus.
Get on the bus.
Really simple.
And we're actually starting a movement start of next week called Two Calls, Two Dads, where we're encouraging men to call two mates in their circle and check on how they're going during this COVID crisis. Say, are you on the bus?
Yeah.
Come join this movement. Call two dads in your circle as well and so on and so forth. So we're looking to spread a bit of our information through that circle just to empower and equip dads just to be a better dad during this time as well.
And it can be, I guess, this principle, this BUS principle for dads who can't do that or aren't doing that to start small, like to make a kid feel special.
Yep.
It might not necessarily be in dads, you know, hey, you're the love of my life, kind of like that's a very big step for some people.
That's right.
So I guess to even start in the small things, being present at a sporting game.
Yep, totally.
As they're doing their homework.
Yeah, it's a pat the back, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
So starting with the real small things and that adds up in a really big way.
Yeah. Yep. The being there for me was recognising I coach my kids basketball and I'm there. My daughter has just started playing and so I'd go and watch her and thinking, oh, I'm being here. This is really good.
Yeah.
But it was really evident to me when Tia came over to me and she said, did you see what I just did? And I was like, what? What? And I realised that I'd picked my phone up because I got a notification. So being there – it's more than just physically being there. Yeah, it is. And so for me, I was like, I've got this. Youth worker, I'm a chaplain, I've got everything cornered. I'm the father of the year, no worries. But it's a really great thing for me just to go, wow, am I going deep enough in this?
Put your phone down.
Yeah.
Be in the circumstance.
Yeah, and mate, so being there, really going, am I truly? So it's that almost that third person, be able to look at yourself and going, are you really truly? Mm. And is your child seeing that you're being there? That's that's important. And so, so I really think that principle can just go deeper and deeper. You get to one level and then go again and say, how else can I do it exactly? Maybe not take the big leap, but say, what am I doing currently that I can just tweak
spot on
just a little bit and just keep changing that? And And you'll see, this is what's powerful. Again, Sean from our Sydney office gave an example of when he was talking to a group of tradies at a dad's group. And they'd said, look, we're busy. You know, mum's got it pretty much covered. We work, we leave the house at 6 o'clock in the morning, got the kids up and school and all that sort of stuff. When we come home, you know, we're self-employed. We've got to start doing quotes and orders and that sort of stuff as soon as we get home. But then I'm really there for the bath time and then I read a book. You know, isn't that enough? And Sean had said, maybe it is, but why don't you look at the little tweaks that you can do? What if you, when you came home, instead of going straight into your office and doing the orders, what if you had 20 minutes of when you walk in the door, just give unconditional time to your kids?
Sure. Mm.
Just 20 minutes. Can you commit to that? And they're like, yeah, let's give it a try. There's one dad that sought Sean out to give feedback in the next term, I think it was. And he said, mate, I can't tell you how amazing that one little thing was. Is that I came home and thought, okay, give it 20 minutes, I'll put the phone away, just come in and saw that my boys had three kids. And he said, I struggle to do it 20 minutes now. And he's like, oh, okay, because it's an hour, easily an hour. Because once I started doing it, the kids started to be awakened to me in my presence. And he said, I now get to the stage where I drive up the driveway in my diesel and they recognize the voice. And there's three boys at my car door opening the door, going, dad, 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 you know. And he said, so we kick 40 or we do whatever it is and we have that amazing time. He said, but how that's flowing on is the teachers are saying, well, what's going on with your kids? Mm. They're engaging more in school. There's all these little things. So I love those anecdotal stories where you can go, actually, this works. And just that little tweak that dad did, but he saw value in himself. That was, I think, the most powerful thing is that dad suddenly went, wow, I'm really valuable and I want to keep stepping into this space, you know. So that's a cool story.
It's amazing. Really good. We're coming to the end of our time, but thanks so much for sharing all your stories and your heart for this as well. I think if this is something crucial in our nation, I love that you guys are nationwide already. I think you're in nearly every state now, every territory.
Getting there,
Fantastic, your online presence as well. And if this can shine some awareness on it, I think it really sets our nation up and our future generations up, but they're not fatherless generation, which I think will be incredible.
Yeah.
So thanks for your time today. Thanks for your stories as well. And for all our listeners out there, we hope you got something really great out of the podcast today. We hope you ride in the bus, even if you aren't a father or a parent yet, maybe just in your relationship. There's some really gold principles that you can apply to your friendships during this time as well. We'll be back next week. We've got some other great guests coming on the show to help you influence your world for good and for God. We'll see you next time.